Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast. Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la bonne. Ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs. John, you found the dogs. He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Monday, March 11th. Thanks everyone for watching on YouTube Live, on Facebook Live, and on Twitter Live. It is the Sick Podcast, and I am Tony Marinaro, and it's brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, named by the Financial Times as one of America's fastest growing companies in 2023, recognized by the Globe and Mail as a top growing Canadian company for 2 years in a row. They work with some of the biggest Fortune 500 companies, providing end-to-end logistics services. Join a winning team and check out Energy's career page for available opportunities. Also brought to you in part by these guys right here, Labitta TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. Labitta TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. Labitta TB, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Playground, get ready to LOL and enjoy a fun evening with friends. This event promises to tickle your funny bone and leave you in stitches. Don't miss out on this opportunity to laugh until it hurts. Reserve your spot now for a night of nonstop laughter at Playground. Remember, it's every Wednesday at 8 p.m. where the jokes fly and the laughs just don't stop. Don't miss out on the funniest night of the week at Playground, where every laugh is louder than the last. See you there for a night of unforgettable. Oh yeah, come join us at Playground, just over the Mercier Bridge, only minutes from downtown Montreal. Playground, experience the strip without the trip. And of course, brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions, where you know all our insurance isn't created equal, and you know where to find the right solution for you. It's Accent Insurance, of course. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop it for you to find the right product, right on the money, whatever your insurance needs are, home, automobile, or business. And every time I think of my buddy Sergio Momesso, I think of their phone number. Call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636 and get the right solution at the right price. We're talking insurance, of course. Visit their website at axaassurance.com. All right, okay. We have a lot to talk to you about. Let's bring him in. Collaborator every Monday evening, Eric Engels of Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. What's going on?
What's going on? I'm looking looking a lot taller than you all of a sudden here.
You are looking taller than me, but it's a problem I have, which I've been trying to fix for a little while, and I either need a shorter tripod, or I need a platform for the seat to go on top of, or I need a chair that actually goes higher. Anyway, one day...
Yeah, this isn't better.
I'll figure it out. Don't worry about it.
Hold on.
It's all good. This is the beauty of doing stuff like this, you know?
Of working on the internet. We gotta
you know, while you're doing this, as a matter of fact, I can tell you that, and I'll do this.
You gotta get your chair higher. I don't know.
Yeah, the Sick Podcast is also brought to you in part by Manscaped. Top of the evening to you. This episode is brought to you by St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows, make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun, Eric Engels, with the leaders in below the kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest, Eric, with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code Montreal for 20% off and free shipping. All right, okay. So, that's exactly what it looks like.
It's official. We need to get you sitting on a phone book or something.
Yeah, we definitely do. Anyway, I'm going to figure it out. I have somebody coming over to my house this week who told me he's going to help me out. Okay. All right. Okay. The Canadians, by the way, they made a deal earlier today, and you're probably saying, hold on a second. I thought you can't make trades. The minor league deal, of course. The Canadians acquired forward Arnaud Durandeau from the New Jersey Devils in exchange for forward Nathan Legarre. So a minor league deal there. Any thoughts either way from you on that?
The only thought is obviously the Canadians feel it's pretty important to make the playoffs with Laval this season. And you know what? I know a lot of people look at Laval and be like, how could they not make the playoffs? Five teams and out of seven in the division will make it, or five teams out of eight in their division. But they came into the season with the youngest team in the American Hockey League. So it's just they obviously have had some ups, some downs. They've had some goaltending issues. But now they're trying to make a charge here. And they had a big weekend, obviously, with winning a couple games and a few of the teams in front of them losing, which is very important. And we'll see where it goes. But it's clear that the Canadians want to make that happen. And you can see why, not just obviously for the players that are there, but also for the players that are coming, like David Reinbacher or Adam Engstrom or Lane Hudson or, you know, whoever, go down the list. So
Mayu.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, for Mayu, who's there. Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So I know 1 week ago, when last time you joined this, you thought that when all was said and done, David Savard was likely going to be traded, and you thought the Canadians would retain 50% of the salary. If I can, and I've done this before, I'm going to do my old Barry Horowitz from the WWF and pat myself there on the back, because I got that one. I didn't think they were going to trade David Savard. I thought they would have if they would have got exactly what they wanted. I didn't think GMs were going to give them exactly what they wanted. Doesn't mean I agree with that, by the way, because to tell you the truth, I think Edmonton should have gone after David Savard. I've even said that the New York Islanders should have gone after David Savard. So I there's a couple of teams I think should have acquired David Savard, who I think can help a team in the playoffs in a year where I think a lot of teams think that they can win the Stanley Cup. I think Florida probably thinks they can. I think Vegas thinks they can. I think Edmonton thinks they can. I think Winnipeg thinks they can. I think Vancouver thinks they can. Dallas probably thinks they can. The Rangers probably think there's probably a lot of teams who think that they can win the Stanley Cup. And maybe some other teams think, you know what, if we get into the playoffs, who knows if they have that mentality. But anyway, long story short, when all was said and done, he was not traded. Logic will tell us that they didn't get what they wanted for him, and that's why he wasn't traded. Because I believe that, once again, Kent Hughes would have traded him if he would have got exactly what he absolutely wanted. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I wanted or was willing to part with if he was able to get that price. There's a bit of a difference in the framing there, because they didn't want to trade David Savard. They were just willing to trade him if they could obtain a certain price for him. And the biggest reason they didn't is because the market shifted, which is surprising to me. I think a couple of things shifted the market. You know, one, the first thing that shifted the market was the trade that Craig Conroy made with Chris Tanev. You know, it's weird. Like, you hear the conversation around the league as we approach the deadline being like, well, they're rentals. Like, how much are you going to really give up to them? Like, we're not that far removed from a time where rentals went for, at times, a first, a prospect, and a player. Like, let's not kid ourselves in terms of what rentals have always fetched at the deadline. First round picks have gone around quite a bit. Second round picks for lesser players. But, you know, David Savard wasn't a rental. But at the same time, the market shifted when Craig Conroy accepted what he accepted from Dallas. And I know in Calgary, and what he has argued to that fan base and everybody else, is that the player that they got back, the prospect on defense, is the key part of the deal for them, much more so than getting a first round pick. But I think the Dallas Stars would have given up that player and a first round pick to get Chris Tanev, because I don't think they had anybody else on their list that was this close to where they had him ranked in terms of what could help their team, including a player like David Savard, who was under contract for one more year. There was only a few teams that was a real advantage for, that they could have David Savard for two seasons. The team that I thought would be most likely to get him would be Toronto. And when we spoke last week, they had added Ilya Lyubushkin, but still had space available to potentially take on David Savard. But it's clear on, I think it was Thursday or Wednesday, that they picked up Joel Edmondson. It became clear that they weren't going to pay the price for Savard, and therefore that was the time where, for me, it was it became a lot less likely that Savard was going to move at the deadline. So, and I did say this to you, and I'm going to stand by it right now. Now that he's here and staying, the earliest possible date I think David Savard will move from the Canadiens is next deadline. And that's if and only if the Canadiens are far out of the contention for a playoff spot, which I don't necessarily believe will be the case. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but with all due respect, I think that's pretty logical, Eric, and I'm going to tell you why. If a team didn't pick him up right before the deadline, what are the chances of them picking him up in the offseason? So he'll go. I believe the Canadiens will trade him, and it'll happen. If I look back at when they traded Monahan, which I think was about, 5 to 6 weeks before the deadline. So I think that the same thing will happen with Savard. He'll be traded next season.
Why?
Anywhere between a month.
Why?
And deadline day.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because I don't think he's in their long-term plans, and I don't think they're going to re-sign him, and I don't think that they want to hold on to him for the rest of the season and then end up losing him for nothing, even though they might be knocking on the door and they might be battling for a playoff spot. I think when Kent Hughes has a plan, he doesn't deviate. When he acquired Sean Monahan with a first-round pick, the plan was to trade Monahan for another first-round pick.
But his plan was to keep David Savard.
Pardon me?
His plan through the deadline was to keep David Savard unless somebody stepped up and really offered something that would enable him to say, okay, we can't justify keeping him versus the value that we're getting. Now that they've kept him, why would the plan be to get him out the door? If they're knocking on the door of a playoff spot.
Because they'd rather take something than nothing.
I don't think that's true. And I think based on the question I asked Kent Hughes during the press conference, where he said, of course, asset management is vital for us, but it's not the be all end all in the decision making process of what to do with a certain player at a given point. Obviously, they feel David Savard adds a certain amount of value to their team. The reason they feel that way is not just based on what he offers them off the ice. It's also what he does on the ice. And I think both those elements could be something that they take advantage of through the term of his contract and worry about at a later point. If it comes down to it, them losing him for nothing. I don't know how high that risk is just based on where he'll be at in his career at that point. I think he can go year to year at that point on contracts. And if the Canadiens feel they still need time with some of their other right-handed prospects, they'll take that time. He will buy those prospects time next season if he's in the fold. And like I said, they value him because he helps make them competitive. And they want to be more the next season is not this season, which we'll have a lot of time to discuss. But they want to be competitive next season. More so, they said coming into this season, they didn't necessarily want to be in the lottery race, but understood that it could be possible. Next season, their intention will be to be competing for a playoff spot. Whether that's realistic or not will be up for debate, and it will be a summer's worth of debate and a whole few months of the first half of the next season type of debate based on whatever Kent gets done during the summer. But it's, at a certain point, you got to take this thing forward. And I think we're reaching that point.
I hear you. Only time will tell. At this point, we don't know if I'm going to be right. You're going to be right. I'm willing to put a lunch or a supper right now, even 1 year away, by the way. But that we could revisit next year if you want, that regardless of where they are in the standings next year, they will trade David Savard before trade deadline day. I understand what Kent told you. Kent's an amazing businessman. He's a stockbroker and he's a poker player. I don't expect him to give you all the information. And sometimes he gives information, but not all of it.
Well, it wasn't just me. It was during the press conference. It's what he was talking about.
Yeah, no, I know.
But the bottom line is...
But what I'm trying to say is the press conference, doesn't matter where we are next year, I'm going to trade David Savard by the deadline next year. He's not going to do that either, right?
I know, but I don't... Okay. I don't... We'll see what happens when we come around to next season and where the Canadiens are at and what kind of things happen to them in the lead up to the trade deadline. But the reason they value David Savard is not just because he's great at mentoring the kids. Like they value him because they feel he can make them more competitive, and they won't have reason to. I don't think you worry about, let's go beef up another team's playoff opportunities and collect a draft pick if our team is sitting in a playoff position a month ahead of the deadline. Like, that doesn't make sense.
No, but at the same time, he is what? The Montreal Canadiens, and there's no doubt that he's one of their better defensemen. You're not going to get an argument from me, but at the same time, I think we have to put things in context as well.
I don't think he'll be worth as much. Like, he won't be worth as much to another team by the time we get there next season. If he wasn't worth that to them over two runs at his contract,
not so sure. 2.5, I agree. Not so sure.
Do you think he's going to be healthier and faster and better next year? Like,
well, the law of physics says no.
Okay,
but you know, then again, I don't know what kind of shape David Savard's going to be in next year. He's got the type of body, with all due respect to him, like, he's probably in amazing shape, but visually, probably not at the top of his shape. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But the law of physics says no. You get older, you don't get in better shape. But, you know, Chris Chelios defied the law of physics. I don't know.
Like, will his value be the question this time around, and it'll be the same question next time around, is will his value be better on the market than it will be to his team?
That's a good question.
Well, that's what it comes down to.
So even if they make the playoffs next year, I mean, is the value lasting one round or getting something for him? And I think they can get a lot for him. By a lot, I don't mean a first-round draft pick. That's not going to happen. But I think a lot of teams would like the fact that he's going to be in the last year of his contract, and they won't be on the hook for a lot of money.
I think the Canadians would rather get playoff experience, and if he helps them get there, then that'll be enough for them to say, oh, if we lose him as a free agent, then we lose him as a free agent, which I don't even think they'd have to do. I also think that he can come back next season and play in a bit of a diminished role over the one that he had this season, and that'll be good for them too, because it'll mean other guys are taking on more. So there's a reason they held on to him this time around. It's not as if they couldn't get something good for him at this year's deadline.
Yeah.
There was something good they could have gotten for him. It just wasn't what they were willing to take him off their team. That's the value proposition at all times, Tony, no matter who the player is we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Are they worth more to us, or are they worth more on the market? And they deemed he was worth more to them, and that's because he still had a year under his contract. So I think they'll use him. And if they're
what you mean, the Canadians out of it, deemed, hold on a second. You're saying the Canadians deemed he was worth more to them than other teams? No,
he was
the
worth,
Canadians set a price for him. They didn't get it.
So he was worth more. He was worth more to them than what he proved to be on the market. Otherwise, he would have been traded.
Okay, yes. And if they would have got a first round pick for them, they would have deemed the exact opposite, and they would have traded him.
Yes, probably.
Correct. Yeah. Okay.
But I don't think that equation's the same. Like, it's not the same equation next year, because they're not hoping to be in the same circumstances next year. And if they find themselves in the circumstances they would hope to be in, which is in a playoff spot a month from the deadline, they're not going to move David Savard just because somebody says, oh, you know what? We'd take him for a second round pick. Like, I don't see that happening.
We'll revisit next year. Let's talk about Jake Allen, because we know that he was traded. And the Canadians got a third round pick in 2025. And based on the conditions that are, I think it's probably safe to say that it will end up being a third round pick in 2025. They pay 50% of his salary. What did you make of the three goalie system finally coming to an end?
Well, the trade itself, I was pretty surprised that they got it done. Didn't think it would happen. Thought it was going to be punted to the offseason. Didn't think that they would have an issue trading him in the offseason, but was surprised to see it happen at the deadline for a couple of reasons. One, no other goaltenders were basically moved except for a middling guy who moved earlier in the day or whatever it was. But up until that point, the goaltending market was dead. Teams that needed goalies earlier in the season decided to roll the dice on who they had. So those opportunities closed up. And New Jersey, you know, you felt if they were going to make a move, it would have been for Jacob Markstrom out of Calgary. So Jake Allen had to waive his no trade clause to go to New Jersey. It's not a team that he necessarily wanted to go to for one reason or another. It was on his list. So I was really surprised when that deal came through less than 30 minutes from the deadline. And I mean, it was pretty tidy work considering what you've been saying for a long time, that this was statistically his worst season, and just the market being what it was, to even get a third round pick, even for retaining his salary, it's I think it's a good deal for the Canadians. I think it'll end up being a better deal for the Canadians than it will be for the Devils, who, with respect to Jake Allen, who I think will help stabilize their situation there, they need more than just that in net. So I was surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that he was traded, even though he was having the worst season statistically of his career. Teams like to get insurance policies. They do it at all positions. Goalie is no different. You have a team that's paying 50% of your salary. I'm just surprised that he went to New Jersey. I don't get it. It doesn't look like New Jersey is going to make the playoffs. It doesn't mean they can't. They're 6 points behind a wild card spot. Mind you, they've played a game more than the Islanders today. But I don't know. I don't.
Well, they're going to
New Jersey.
Yeah, I don't get a lot of the things they did in the lead up to this. You know, it seems Tom Fitzgerald acted pretty late on a number of fronts, whether it was acquiring a top level goaltender like Jacob Markstrom or deciding to fire his coach at a point where they seemed to fall too far out of the race to catch up. I think if you're going to justify the logic of it, they don't want to go through another season where they're out there searching for reliable options in their net. I think they're still going to go out and get a number one type guy in the summer. But now with Kakinen in, with Allen in and under contract, they have a chance to create a race and have a certain level of depth and assurance at that position that they feel was a big factor in why they were disappointing this season. So, again, it's their problem. Like, I'm not sure. Kent Hughes doesn't have to care about it. He ends up with a third round pick that could become a second. I agree with you. It's most likely going to be a third, although yeah. Who knows, man? Like, maybe whoever they bring in gets hurt and Allen ends up playing his 40 games and ends up saving their season. It's not like he's incapable of doing it with a good team in front of him. So we'll see.
Let's talk about Caden Primo now, because the three-goalie system has come to an end. So it's Montembeau and Caden Primo for at least the rest of the season. Then we'll see going forward. Marty St. Louis earlier today on Caden Primo's progression. Let's bring it up.
Who's the kid that's played this season on the whole? How has he improved? How do you... Caden Primo.
Okay.
Sorry.
It's okay.
How do you feel he's improved? How do you rate his performance?
Well, he's taken a jump. You know, and you know, you think about the three goalie rotation, and it's not an easy thing for the goalies. But I think for Jake was probably harder to gain anything out of that than because of, you know, where he is in his career. But I think you look at like a goalie like Primes, who's young, and you know, how are you gonna grow? Is it more games or more practice time? You know, so I feel like Primes has had a lot of practice time. So is that part? Is the three goalie situation, is that part of his growth because he had more practice time? We'll never know, but we're happy where he is right now with the situation we were in this year. He's taking a jump. And is it more practices? Is it more time with his goalie coach? I don't know, but we're happy where he is.
He feels that it was good for him. The fact that he had the mental approach to ensure that it would be, what do you think that says about?
Well, I mean, I think it's a sign of maturation. You know, I think the generation today, the young guys, they want it. They want everything, and they want it now. And it's just a generation, you know. And they usually want things with bare minimum, you know. And it's a challenge, and we. You know, he's had a lot of practice time, but he also has had to earn some of his starts with a three-goalie rotation. And I think he's handled it really well. And like I said, same thing with Army. Like, everything starts with the player. You know, we can try to help him as much as we can, but it starts with the player, and Prime's done his part for sure.
Very diplomatic of Marty St. Louis. God love him for saying, for the most part, that he thinks this young generation is spoiled. and who knows, maybe even entitled. No, but he didn't say that. It's my interpretation. Doesn't mean that's what it is, okay? But I understood what he was saying about Caden Primo. You wrote an article on him earlier today. Tell me. mental performance coach?
Yeah. So, look, I agree with Marty completely. There is, and you don't want to generalize, but in general, you know, you look at a generation that has had that has access to everything, right? Anything you want nowadays, and us too, we benefit from that. Anything you want is at the tip of your finger and your phone, right? Like, you can order anything you need. You can get it almost instantly delivered. You can have anything you want in life. And I think that has created a certain, and bring it to professional sports and bring it to an NHL that has had to get younger due to the salary cap. And you combine those two factors, and there are a lot of players who, when they don't get what they want and don't get it immediately, they can be quite impatient about the whole thing and not be able to put things in perspective. I think Caden Primo, when you look at the circumstances that he was faced with this year, it could have been extremely negative. It could have been what everybody thought it was going to be and what it was, in terms of a detriment to his development. He didn't see it that way at all, and he never approached it that way, and that's the reason why it wasn't. It could have been that, but Caden Primo had the maturity to go out and say, I'm going to work. I'm going to take advantage of every minute I have, personal and private, with Eric Raymond, the goaltending coach, on and off the ice. I'm going to work, which he invested in over a year ago, in terms of hiring a mental performance coach. Not the one that the Canadians currently employ, but somebody else that, coming out of that 21-22 season when the Canadians brought Caden Primo up at a time where they were injury plagued and playing awful hockey and didn't have any other options, and kind of threw him to the wolves because they didn't have a choice. It really did some damage. It did some damage for him mentally. And I asked him today, like, were you able to put that time in perspective? Like, that, you know, like, it wasn't your fault what was happening. And he said, well, at the time, no, like, the competitor in me put it all on myself, right? Like, you're a goaltender, you're the last line of defense, you want to be the savior in that situation. And here's Primo, young Primo, inexperienced and thrown to the wolves and, you know, trial by fire and just no help in front of him, just an unwinnable situation, if you remember, Tony. And I think it just smacks of maturity that he never hesitated for a second, that when he realized that his confidence had dropped and affected his play to the point that it was worth evaluating something beyond just the physical technical elements of playing goalie, that he goes out and consults with a mental performance coach. And a big thing that people need to know is that there's a major difference between a sports psychologist and a mental performance coach. A mental performance coach focuses on performance. They give you tools related specific to confidence, but also, as Primo said, gaining perspective, putting things in proper perspective. And he put his situation this season in proper perspective and handled it like a true pro. And the opportunity that he has in front of him now, how he took advantage of it helped put him in this opportunity, and he fully earned what he's got coming to him now. And I think his approach is probably the biggest reason why you might be able to put faith in him succeeding in this role, right? Like, the pressure's finally on him to be a backup goalie in the NHL and push Sam Montembeau to potentially down the line be the starter. Whether or not you believe he technically has that ability, we're going to find out, because he's going to have time to play. But mentally, the strength that he's exhibited in coming back from where he fell down to and how he handled this year's situation is a pretty good reason to believe that he might take advantage of this.
I know a couple of years ago, I had a conversation which, you know, I was not told that I could use it on the record, so I'll treat it as off the record for now, from someone who has a lot of experience in hockey, who now makes their living talking hockey, like us, who has known and watched Caden Primo going back 6 or 7 years. And according to this person, Primo's weakness, or what he had to work on, was the mental aspect of the game. This is what I was told a couple of years ago, in terms of the ability to shake off the bad goal and not let it result in a second bad goal, like right away, or another goal right away, or another goal, not let it affect the rest of his game where it's like, okay, you know what? It's not my night, and like not fight as much as he would with the intention of like going into the game. And it's something that I think you could probably say was still true. I mean, at one point that game where he gave up five to the same corner, or we saw instances earlier in the season where a bad goal followed a bad goal, but I've seen some improvements and some steps forward taken here over the last little while. And I think Marty was talking about that as well, the maturation. I would imagine the mental performance coach has a lot to do with this. I could tell you that, you know, my boy who's playing in Portugal right now, I set up Zoom calls with a mental performance coach when I find that he needs it, or he thinks he needs it, or he asks for it. And it helps.
It was so interesting speaking with Caden about it. And, you know, as the reporter in that situation, I'm not looking for Caden to divulge whatever secrets he has in terms of those interactions, right? Like, there is a certain level of privacy you respect. You know, I don't expect him to sit here and get into the sessions word for word of what he was going through. But I asked him if he was hesitant to go and talk to somebody about this stuff. And he said, no. He said, but, you know, there's a feeling out process through the first couple of sessions. But when you see an immediate result from those conversations, it allows you to dive right into the deep end with it. And that's exactly what he's done. He without giving away the details of what they've worked on together, and he's had a couple conversations with JF Minard. He hasn't worked with him personally. That's who the Canadians employs a mental performance coach. But he sees absolutely the benefit and thinks he's brilliant. But this was, you know, this predated that, and going back over a year. And he just said that he's benefited so much from it. That from a building up his confidence and having certain foundations to rely on to get back to it when it gets shaken by this or that. And like, you're right, Tony had that one game where he allowed the goals to cascade, right? Like, where one bad one hits him with a glove and then he gets hit four times.
Yeah.
Like, see the way he came back from that, though? Like, it's a totally different thing that we saw from what we saw in the past, right? And I just, this kid cares so much about this opportunity. He's worked his whole life for it. He's a real pro. He's not a go out and party kid. He's a good kid. And he took it upon himself to develop in every way he possibly could to earn this opportunity he's gotten. And I think his play throughout the season was the biggest argument against the idea that the three goalie rotation was hurting him this year. Like, he performed steadily and successfully with the exception of that game that we're talking about. And I think he'll take another step in that direction now that he has this option. It might not happen immediately. I think people should be, you know, understanding if Tuesday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, it's nobody's best game. Like, the Canadians were on a long road trip. Marty was saying he was thankful that it was Toronto and Saturday night for them to play that first game back. If there's a letdown coming, it probably comes against the Columbus team you don't expect them to have trouble with. And we'll see how Primo handles that situation in the first official game he's playing as the backup goalie of the Montreal Canadiens, like, really in an official capacity. And there's a bit more pressure on the line. And so we'll see how he deals with it. But I'd more look at it and say, see how he deals with this situation from here to the end of the season and not just one game. He's earned that benefit of the doubt. And I think he could take another step. But super interesting for me, hearing how, as a 24-year-old, he took it upon himself to, hey, I'm going to hire a mental performance coach. I'm going to work on this other element. Yeah. And Marty's right. It is a sign of maturity, and a maturity that is not necessarily found in a lot of other people his age.
It's an interesting conversation, because throughout the entire season, when we've talked about the three-goalie system, and although no one was really crazy about it, I maintained you know, whether it was my own personal opinion or you know, in debates on radio, television, podcasts with other members of the media, I maintain that it didn't hurt Primo. And I know a lot of people believe that it did. And I don't, and this is my logic to it all, okay? So Caden Primo could have played more games at the American Hockey League level. That's true. Then he would have been playing at the National Hockey League level. That's true. So let's just say the Canadians, Primo played 13 with the Canadians. Let's just say Primo would have been part of a two-goalie system and they would have moved Allen at the beginning of the year. So Primo would have played after 64 games. Let's say Montembeau would have played 44 and Primo would have played 20. Or 43 and 21. So Primo probably could have played 8 more games in the National Hockey League.
He's played 14. He's made 14.
Played 14.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just say he could have played 22 or 23. So he could have played 8 or 9 more games. But if he wasn't here and he was in Laval, he would have lost out on practices with NHL players for middle of September, so to middle of October, to middle of November, or end of September, to end of October, to end of November, to end of December, to end of January, to end of February, to the month of March now. So how many practices over 4 or 5 months at the NHL level compared to 8 or 9 less games? Don't you think he's better off here and having all those more practices versus NHL players? With the only drawback being 8 or 9 less, like, I don't get it. So even, I personally think it was better for him.
Let's put it this way. Even if I didn't agree with you, even if most of the fans didn't agree with you, even if the organization themselves didn't necessarily agree, or the coach, and I'm not saying that this is the case, I'm just making a point here. Even if nobody agreed, Primo didn't see any of it as a negative. Primo didn't think it was bad for him at all. Primo believed that he would benefit from spending the year in the NHL, no matter how many games he played, versus playing 55 in the AHL this year. So long as Primo felt the benefit of it,
yeah,
didn't view it as a negative, that's all that really matters in this equation, right? Like, because it's up to him to be the best version of himself. And look, I don't think he would sit there and say that this was the optimal thing for him. Maybe he'd be even a step ahead if he played a bit more and got a bit more practice time in the actual practices themselves, instead of having to rotate in and out of the net with whoever the backup was going to be for that night, or whether he was the backup and the third guy. But he made the best of this situation. So did the Canadians. He was lucky to have a guy like Jake Allen, who it was the worst for, be such a pro. And I got to say, for on Jake's side, which I'm not sure how much the fans even realize this, if you go back 2 training camps ago, when there was a race between Jake and Primo and Montembeau, and you know, Primo was obviously in a situation where he wasn't going to be able to win that race unless he played like the second coming of Patrick Roy in training camp and whatever limited action he was going to see. Jake was talking about Caden as the future of the Montreal Canadiens goaltending position. It was Jake who was, you know, asked about Sam and Caden, and really talking up Caden as the next guy. And that I know that meant a lot to Primo. And I know he not only told us that, and everybody who would listen, he told Primo that too and supported him. And that's a big part of how this player's confidence has been able to rebound from the position he was in 21-22, where he was, you know, here he was up the creek without a paddle with the Canadians, and it affected him. So I just think all with it all done and behind us now, this kid still found a way to get better. There's no like denying that he's gotten better this year. There's no denying it. Whether or not he could have gotten even better if he had played more, that's debatable. Yeah. But I think what's most important is how he feels about it, and he feels good about it. So I think that's positive.
You know, before we get to another player who probably has been going through the same thing and probably benefited from the same thing, there's a bunch of people watching, of course, on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter And I think we have to get to last game. And they're probably wondering what in the world happened between Arbor, Jack Eye, and Ryan Reese. I mean, George Larac was on Friday night. He said Arbor, Jack Eye, and Ryan Reese will fight, and Arbor, Jack Eye will win, and Ryan Reese will end up in the minors and never play another game in the National Hockey League again. George gets pretty excited from time to time and tends to exaggerate a little bit. I know, having spoken to him earlier today on BPM Sports Radio, that he thought it wasn't up to Jack Eye to make the first move. He thought it was up to Reese to make the first move because Reese did not look good when they fought each other on opening night in mid-October in Toronto. He thought that Jack Eye played a pretty physical game and didn't shy away. And he thought that Reese had ample opportunity to go after Jack Eye, but did not. Did you see it the same way? Were you surprised that the two didn't go on Saturday night? And if you were surprised, why do you think it is they didn't?
I wasn't surprised. I think game circumstances had something to do with it, right? Like the Canadians fell, they went up 1-0 early. So maybe Jack Eye doesn't have the green light to fight at that point of the game where the Canadians are leading and doesn't want to give Toronto a kind of an emotional boost, especially with how flat they looked in the first period. That could be part of it. The other part of it is when they find themselves on the ice together against each other, end of shift, beginning of shift. One way or the other, it didn't happen. I did see one really strong hit from Jaden Struble on Ryan Reeves. I thought he might take out some aggression somewhere else on the ice after that, but I don't know. You know, George is more of an expert on that than I am, and I'm willing to concede that any minute of any day. It was a close game all the way through. You know, maybe if the score changes significantly one way or the other, this happens. There's still one more game, though, between these two teams, so.
There is on a Saturday night. What is it? First week of April, I think, in Toronto.
Yeah, April 6th, I believe, here in Montreal.
Yeah, I think so.
It's in Montreal. Yeah.
Oh, it's in Montreal? Really? Yeah, I thought it was in Toronto that game. All right.
No, okay. No more games in Toronto.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Only one this year. Really weird. But anyways.
Yeah, the one had to be the opening night of the season. You're right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there it is. It is in Montreal. You're right. Okay. Okay. Look at that. The rest of the schedule, by the way, is like really heavy duty. Okay. So they probably look, they're not taking on a giant killer tomorrow night when they host Columbus, but on Thursday they host Boston. On Saturday they visit Calgary. On Tuesday they visit Edmonton. On Thursday they visit Vancouver. On Sunday they're in Seattle. On Tuesday they're in Colorado. And then after that, they host Philadelphia and Carolina. That's the rest of their month of.
Look, they have a, you know what?
The rest of March, pardon me. Yeah.
Yeah, they have a game against Columbus here. They have a game towards the end of the season against Ottawa. They have 8 games against teams that are in the top 10. And they have another 4 games against teams that are right on the bubble of the playoffs. Like the four like that are in the playoffs and another couple against teams that are right on the bubble. So they have, according to some people, the second hardest schedule from here to the end of the season.
Yeah.
If you're a tank enthusiast, you might be looking at that and saying, well, that's good news. But I would also suggest that it keeps the Canadians engaged from here to the end because they're not going to want to get embarrassed. And they haven't been embarrassed in any of these games. Like, it's pretty unbelievable. You go even back to the 5-game losing streak and where it went to from there, like their worst game that they played in the last month is against Arizona, a game that they won. And You look at the games against Florida, Tampa, Nashville, Carolina, and Toronto. And I'd argue they were the better team in 4 of those 5. And the Carolina game was a lot closer than the score ended up being at 4-1. Sorry for the beeping, my dishwasher.
I gotta
stop running that thing when we're doing the podcast.
That's okay. Well, technically, you know, you say the last month, it's March 11th. On February 11th, they lost 7-2 at home versus St. Louis. That was one of the worst ones I've seen this season, if not the worst. Yeah. But then since then, settled down pretty good. They lost the game a couple of days later. They gave up 7 in New York versus the Rangers. But in the last, I would say, three,
So right after that game,
4 weeks. Yeah, they've been pretty good. They've been pretty good.
They'll remain engaged.
Speaking of the schedule, Marty St. Louis earlier today on the tough schedule left. Let's bring it up.
Tu regardes notre cédule, je pense qu'on a la cédule la plus tough dans la ligue dans le stretch. C'est des gros défis. On est là. Des fois, ça prend un petit peu plus de finition. Ça prend.
All right, there you have it. Marty St. Louis says, they take a look at the schedule down the stretch. We probably have one of the toughest schedules, but it's a bigger challenge, and we're gonna deal with it. There you have it.
Yeah, I just think he probably feels good about the fact that the Canadians have been so engaged in these games. I think it's win-win for everybody here, right? For the tank enthusiasts like yourself who want to see them lose as many games as possible and improve their draft positioning. It's likely assured with the competition they face, but for them and wanting to continue to grow their culture and the way they play and their ability to take a step forward next year, it's remaining close with those teams within those games. And that's what they've done recently, and that's what they hope to continue to do moving forward. And obviously, they'd like to win as many of them as they possibly can, but they're not under any illusions about what they have as a roster versus some of those teams and what's at stake for those teams versus what's at stake for theirs over the next few weeks.
Marty St. Louis with a great quote today, and he said the NHL used to be an older league years ago, and it was more difficult for young players to grab their spot because it wasn't a development league. But now you have to have the mentality of development because the players are younger. So Marty St. Louis talking about how the league has changed over the years. An older league before, so less development or no development, and younger league now with younger players, so you're going to have more development. It's an interesting analogy. Armia, I want to talk to you about him because you talked about players who Marty St. Louis says Primo's made a jump. Armia's made a jump in the last, I would say, this last 4 weeks that we've been talking about. Seems to be a better player and playing better with more consistency than he has in at least a couple of years now. Is that the same key to success as Caden Primo and mental performance coach?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think it's been over 3 months with Armia. I think he's been extremely consistent in terms of what he's offered. And, you know, Marty was asked if it's almost as if he's been coaching a different player, like he's gotten a different value player out of that whole process. Yes, it does have to do with Armia having a very difficult time getting over mistakes that he made in games and letting them weigh him down from shift to shift. And that's why you see his game go up and down so much. And now, admittedly, himself, with the work he's done with Jeff Menard, who is employed by the Canadiens as a mental performance coach, has found better resources to park those mistakes immediately and move on to the next play and continue to have a positive impact within a game and continue to reach further into the depth of his own talent and ability to perform more consistently. The one thing that I want to bring up, whether it's about Primo or Armia or a guy like Josh Anderson who's chosen not to consult with these types of people is...
Oh, really? He hasn't? Okay.
Arpin Basu wrote a story about this in The Athletic, speaking to Anderson about how he can still rebound and be a better player next year. And he's going to have to do that, obviously. He asked him if I had asked Anderson about this a while back. I didn't write about it because I didn't want to slant it one way or another in terms of the decision. And I'll tell you exactly why. Arpin had asked Anderson if he had used Jeff Menard at all yet. He's like, no, he didn't strike the possibility of potentially going down that road in the future, but hadn't felt it was necessary. And when I spoke to him going back a couple months, if he had ever considered it, I kind of framed it as like, this isn't a sports psychologist, right? Like, it's a performance coach. So maybe like it doesn't necessarily have to be because you feel your game is slipping or is in a negative place that you have to go and have that. I think there's that's the point I kind of want to make here is your game doesn't have to be in a bad place for you to benefit from that resource.
Yeah.
Like, I've had a couple of brief conversations with JF Menard, and he, like anybody else in the organization who is tasked with coaching players on an individual basis, is not going to divulge what he talks about with this person or that person.
But of course not.
One of the things he told me that I thought was super interesting that I think could apply to any player who's even playing really well is he talked about, do you know, like rest and recovery is such an underrated part of performance. Like he was saying that if you look at the very best athletes in the world, guys, and the guys who have had the longest careers, he pointed to LeBron James as an example.
They sleep more than anybody else. Cristiano Ronaldo's another one.
There you go. So, and it was just a small example of like, this guy has worked with Olympians across several different sports. He's gotten to pick the brains of so many elite athletes. Whether you're Josh Anderson or you're Joel Armia or you're Caden Primo and players that have had certain issues, that they would certainly benefit from that work, and two of the three already have.
Yeah.
You could be Nick Suzuki too and benefit from the work with those types of guys. And I just, you know, I remember a couple of seasons ago when Jonathan Drouin was really going through a difficult time, I had asked him, like, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, your good buddy in Colorado, talked about how for his first three seasons, he wasn't able to access the best version of himself and did some work with a sports psychologist that he felt was majorly beneficial. And Drouin said, well, I never felt like it got that bad that I needed that. And it's look, Drouin at the time was, you know, 24 years old or whatever, like still young. Like it's just, I just hope that the athletes out there not only take advantage of the resources that are available to them, but also are able to reframe it in their own minds that you don't have to be struggling to benefit from this type of work. You talked about doing it with your son and having him talk to somebody when he feels he needs it. But it would be great if your son also looked at the situation and said, this is a tool that I could use to get even better while I'm thriving. Like, more and more athletes need
it. It not only helps you when you have a dip in performance, it helps you when you want to increase performance.
You need to be able to view it in a different way. And I understand why an athlete, a pro athlete who has worked his entire life to get to where he gets to and knows the path, would view that type of work with a certain stigma attached to it or a certain, oh, there must be something wrong for me to do that.
Yeah.
It's understandable that would be a natural inclination, right? They just
you
hope that the people in the organization frame it properly because JF Menard is not going to go force himself on any players. It's not up to Marty St. Louis to turn to Josh Anderson and say, go speak to this guy.
Like, of course not. It's got to come from the player.
They can make suggestions. But like in any case, whether you're dealing with a mental performance coach, a goaltender coach, a skills coach, Dr. Shot, who comes in and helps players with their shot, you're in a way better place if it's your players who are taking the initiative and doing it. And that brings us back to Primo, right? Like this maturity that he has showed to take ownership of his own development in one way or another, mentally, off the ice, on the ice, is a big factor in mitigating what could have been a very negative situation for him this year.
Yeah, I find it unfortunate that Anderson has not wanted to talk to a mental performance coach as of yet, because I mean, he had 21 goals in 69 games last year. He's got 8 goals in 60 games this year. His performance has dipped.
So that's it. Maybe he just didn't see it in the light that it can be seen in. And it's understandable. I get it. You think about pro athletes, right? You think about everything they've done to get to where they are.
Yeah.
And what they have to accrue as skill and development to get there. It's hard to look at yourself and say, well, that could help me, when you have a negative kind of stigma attached to it. Like that there's a real balance, because you're telling yourself when you're going through struggles, I'm better than this. And I know I can get back. And I know I just got to remind myself that I'm good and this and that. There's a balance and pulling you in one direction with that stuff and having to admit to yourself, I don't have the answer here.
Yeah.
There's a confidence is a really complicated thing, man. Like, especially at this level. So I don't judge Josh Anderson for that.
Yeah.
But I hope if he feels that it would be beneficial to him, that he doesn't hesitate and goes in with an open mind and says, you know what? I'm not going to see a psychologist here. I'm not going to go divulge my secrets. I'm going to go to somebody who's an expert in their field that could potentially unlock something that helps me. And whether they do or they don't, at least you have an open mind to the possibility that it could happen.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You're talking about rest and recovery. Cristiano Ronaldo and LeBron James are both 39 years of age. They've been both perfecting their craft for the last 20 years. They're both going to go down as some of the greatest players to ever play their respective sports. You'd have to think that even though it could be a huge debate, you'd have to think that they're going to end up being like top three on anyone's list. And they both sleep about 10 hours a night. They both take like 5 or 6 naps per day of anywhere between 30 and 60 minutes. And you break it all down with practice or, you know, games. Like there's not a lot of time left to go to the restaurant and do things or go out with your friends. They don't. They, you know, and not to mention, they're in ice baths. They're getting massages. It's their whole career has been about taking care of their bodies, the proper rest and relaxation. And you know what? I'm going to give my buddy Jack a plug here from My Essentia and their mattresses. Jack is a former Montrealer who moved out to Florida probably give or take about 10 years ago. And he was in the Jack DeLaccio, and he was in the mattress business. And he opened up, he had a company, My Essentia, and which he actually ended up going to Florida, Boca Raton, opening up the head office over there. He's got a showroom here in Montreal. He's got showrooms all over North America, as a matter of fact.
They bought all those beds for the Habs.
Yeah.
A while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. His idea actually is to custom make a lot of mattresses for a lot of these elite athletes. And you know what? They take basically their body shape and stuff like that. They ask them a couple of questions of how they sleep and how they like to sleep and what size. And you can actually custom make the mattress for them. And if they're in a couple, you can make one side of the mattress custom made for that athlete and another side of the mattress custom make it for their wives or their other halves. Anyway, it's a bit, once again, it's rest and recovery is a huge part of thriving for athletes. And, you know, maybe let's even expand it, athletes. I mean, anybody.
For everybody. Like I was listening I was listening to Conan O'Brien's podcast, and he had Adam Sandler on. And Conan O'Brien, for those who don't know, before he was a talk show host and before he wrote for The Simpsons for many years, he got his start as a writer on Saturday Night Live. And he was talking, this is a very recent episode, about how used to come home from SNL bragging about how they'd stay up for 2-3 days in a row working on the show and so proud of how hard they were working. But in retrospect, looking back on it, probably felt he would have produced much better work if he was getting his sleep. I think all of us would feel that way about what we do in general and hockey reporting in general. Like, I don't get as much sleep as I would like, and I hope it doesn't affect my performance, but I have to think it would be a little bit better if I got the amount of hours that I need. And a lot of the time during the week, I'll take advantage of that little window between like 4 and 6 o'clock before I have to get to the Bell Center, where if I can get a nap in, I'm going to squeeze one in. Because you get home from writing after a game at, you know, midnight and have a hard time turning your brain from 100% down to
winding down.
You know, you get to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. I try to get a workout in before I get to practice for 10:30 in the morning. So it means I'm up 7:30, 8 o'clock in the gym, back home, shower, at the end of the day, I'm not complaining. I work a lot. I get a lot of rest in the summer. That's good. But we should all value that element. And I just think it was interesting just speaking to JF Menard. It was one of the first things that he brought up when I met him. You know, I said, you know, like, what's the big difference between a sports psychologist and a performance coach? He said, well, you know, like, let me give you this example of like focusing on rest and recovery, like something that your typical 23, 24, 25-year-old athlete who's a pro won't put as much emphasis on because they feel they have boundless energy. But look at the athletes who have had the lengthiest careers and have been elite throughout the entirety of them, like a guy like LeBron or a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo, and they value sleep more than anybody you'll ever. They like, you turn to a 24-year-old and said, do you sleep 12 hours a night? They'd say no. Like, why would I even need to do that? Well, there's your answer.
Yeah, listen, it didn't negatively affect your performance tonight, I can tell you that much. But why don't we do this? Let's say goodbye so we can both go to bed separately, of course.
Sounds like a good idea.
All right, Eric. I don't know why I had to I had to make that clear, but of course your place. Yeah, let's do that. Hey, Eric, thanks a lot once again. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you soon, my man.
Yeah, I'll send you a booster for your chair.
All right, please do. Please, I can use one of those boosters, baby boosters, now to a podcast booster. Yeah. Thanks, Eric. We'll talk to you soon. Once again, special thanks to Energy Transportation Group. Special thanks to Labitta TV. Special thanks to Playground. And special thanks to Accent Insurance Solutions for their partnership and supporting the show. We're very much appreciated. We appreciate all of you for watching as well. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro. It's absolutely free. Thank you. Tell your friends about it. Like it, share it with your friends. Comment Sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple. It's our way of feeling the love. For Agnello, Sammy, and Juliana at Master Control, bidding you a very good night. They're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place, right after the Canadiens and the Columbus Blue Jackets, starting at 10 p.m. Eastern. My guest tomorrow night, former Montreal Canadian, Maxime Lapierre. Talk to you tomorrow. À demain, mes amis.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.